Dan, we made it. We made it to the end of the Aquatics GB Swimming Championships 2024. Poolside for every single day of the meet, capturing content, interviewing swimmers. What a meet to be part of.
It was special, wasn't it, to be fair?
Yeah.
Obviously, the big build-up until the last race, because it always is the showcase event. But my gosh, every evening session had a big race. In fact, multiple races, actually. Yeah. I think each day was just as exciting as the next. It was a great meet to be a part of, honestly.
Yeah, so welcome to this episode of the Propulsion Swimming Podcast, everyone. We are, of course, going to be going through and reviewing last week's incredible swimming championships at the London Aquatics Centre. But I think, like we started in that very brief intro, it's worth noting, Aquatics GB put on one hell of a meet, a different level to anything we have ever seen in this country before. Production value, just the sheer, like, entertainment aspect, the spectators that was packed. It's a poolside and an atmosphere in a swimming pool that I've personally never seen in the UK. And the only time I've ever like had rival it was when me and you went to World Champs in Barcelona in 2013.
We didn't actually look at the broadcast at all, did we?
No.
It was only when the second to last day we actually had a look at the broadcast and had a look at all the graphics and the high quality like interviews and bits and pieces like that. So we actually didn't really see that. So we looked at the poolside atmosphere. And gosh, like it was near enough sold out most days, which was insane. Like you don't have that at swimming competitions. So that's brilliant. I just think the whole thing was just brilliant from start to finish.
And the most exciting part of this is the building blocks. This is the base of the pyramid now. Yeah. From speaking around to, we actually spoke to Drew, who's the new CEO of Aquatics GB. This is the start. This is the baseline for the next few years, which is so exciting to hear.
Yeah, what I really hope is that they hit the numbers that they needed to put it on terrestrial TV as a regular every year.
We're hearing quite good things, to be
honest with you. but if that's the case, and every year it's going to be at the London pool again for the next, is it 3, 4, 5 years?
Till the next Olympics.
Till the next, yeah, so like another 4 years, which is brilliant. And hopefully it stays that way. And like we said, the broadcast and the actual event itself was amazing.
Look, the interest in it, like we don't overly share our social figures too much around the place. And I know we did a post at the end of the meet, like the day after, saying we've hit 3 million views. It's now at like 10 million views. at the point of recording this podcast, the clips that got poolside, everyone in the world wanted to see this meet. It was the first trials around the place. And we're going to review it all. But before we get into that, I want to say a huge thank you to everyone who listened to our whopper of a preview podcast. I know me and Dan were recording till 1 in the morning, but at no point did we realize it was 2.5 hours long. We just spewed that much knowledge and that much opinion of British swimming at the time, which rebranded after we recorded to Aquatics GB.
I think people appreciated when they were coming down from Scotland, which is like they had something to listen to. Like, and then 2.5 hours, like, well, that's fine. We can just listen to that on the way there.
This podcast now is not going to be 2.5 hours. I can't sit through and edit another 2.5 hour long podcast.
Yeah.
That was quite hard work. So we're going to rattle through day by day. We're going to go through the highlights of each day, the best races. We're going to talk about some of the Olympic nomination times hit. But this isn't going to be discussing selection overly, simply because the Olympic team gets announced next week. And we're going to be kind of reviewing it and talking through that Olympic team on next week's podcast. That's really our aim for how we're going to do things. Mm-hmm. So we don't swamp you with information yet again. So, Dan, should we start with day one then? And we'll kick things straight into high gear and talk about the return of Adam Peaty. Because for him to be going back 50, sub 58, is hugely, hugely important for his three-peat.
I honestly thought, you know, the heat swim where he went 58.5, I thought that would be actually his end goal. I would have been quite happy with a 58.5.
Yeah, but from talking round, he wasn't, like, he wanted sub 58.
He wanted a 57. And when he did that in the final, you just think, oh, he's back. And you think, now he's got a fantastic chance of not just medaling. I think that was always going to happen in Paris. But the fact now he has a great chance of winning gold again and making it, I don't think it's ever happened in the event where someone's won three golds back to back at the
Not in the 100. It has happened with Phelps.
Yes, not in the 100 breaststroke. No. Yes. So, yes, and he was in good spirits when we spoke to him, as he
very
should be.
He was very happy.
Very happy. Yeah, so it only bodes well for the rest of this season, and then we'll see what he does afterwards, I guess. But obviously, Paris is the main goal.
I think at the end of last year, after he swam the World Cup series, we both said, like, this is the most confidence we've ever had in Adam regaining his title after his time out of the water, even when Ching Haiyang was doing what he was doing. Yep. Now it's like, well, for me, it's gold or silver now. Like, there's no...
Yeah, I think so.
It's 1-2, and he is firmly up there in discussion with Ching Haiyang.
Yeah, I think so as well. Yeah. We haven't obviously seen what Ching Haiyang has done in recent months, because his Chinese trials are...
He's not there yet. He's not raced yet.
No, it's in June, I think. I can't really remember. But he's got a while until that actually happens. Mm. But yeah, to see a 57 next to his name for the first time, I believe, since Tokyo, actually, that must be a huge confidence builder for him.
Absolutely. Now, if you want to watch Adam race at the London Aquatic Centre and you didn't get to see him at these Aquatics GB Swimming Championships, you will get another chance before the Olympics, because there is the AP Race London International taking place at the end of May, and tickets are on sale now at event.aprace.club, starting from as low as £1. Now, this was an event that me and Dan attended last year, and we absolutely loved every second of it. We literally started this podcast talking about high value, high entertainment swimming meets. This is produced by the same team. This is produced by John Bailey, who's the World Aquatics producer. This is put on at such high value, and you will get to see like what me and Dan are talking about here.
Well, we did actually, didn't we? Spoke to the AP team, and some of the names that are coming over again.
So exciting.
It is massive. I mean, you get to not only meet and greet and race these guys, but you get to see them up close and personal. And it's just, I think if you want to be a sponge in that sort of moment and learn from the best and watch the best, then that's the meet you want to go to, definitely.
Absolutely. So, like I said, tickets are on sale now. There's a link in the description of this podcast if you want to go and head over and have a look. And if you want to enter and potentially race against Adam, if you think you're good enough, go do that as well, because entries are also open. So other things that happened on the first day of the Aquatics GB Swimming Championships, the women's 200 meters freestyle. I'm going to start with Abby Wood in second before we get to Freya Colbert. For her to be setting a half-second PB, I think she said at the age of 25, 26, was so impressive. And it set the meet off really well for her to almost build confidence. This, is it one of her main events? I think she said the 2am is, but the two frees right up there.
Yeah, I think so now, because of the relay aspects of things, that she has to do these events to make the team go to Paris for the relay. The 2am I still think is her favourite event. We'll get onto that, obviously, because she had a pretty decent time
No, it was pretty good.
Yeah, but actually, even though Freya won, I think Abby's time is a little bit more impressive, because I think Freya was there or thereabouts on PB, whereas Abby, when you lose half a second, so that's actually a big deal, and good enough to make the nomination time as well, which is very exciting, I think, for her.
Yeah, now I'm not even sure if both of these race it individually. Freya has certainly confirmed after the meet that no, she's not racing it. And for me, the relay team is really exciting. So it would be Freya, Abby, Mehdi Harris and Lucy Hope. Those four are all qualified. I think it's probably up in the air about Freya Anderson, who we will discuss kind of towards the end of this podcast, whether she makes the team or not after her glandular fever. But really encouraging signs. Two girls going 156s. And the win and the first nomination selection set Freya Colbert up for a really good meet as well.
Well, we'll talk about her more in her other events, but this was a pretty good starting point, I think, for her. The 200 free, I'd like to see her race it individually, but we all know that she's not going to, because it conflicts with another race as well, doesn't it? But ultimately, the top four girls, they swam well. They all went 158s or sub-159s. Which is solid, I think.
2156s as well.
Yeah, it's very good.
Good place to be. Good place to be. Yeah. Another standout race for me on night one was the women's 200 meters butterfly. Kiana McInnes may be slightly surprising some in beating Laura Stevens in this one. They both went under the Olympic consideration time. But
they did,
Was it that much of a surprise? Like, Kiana's been swimming so well all year, and she was 208 when it was Edinburgh. So
It's a clash of two different styles. So you have Laura, who goes out quite strong, but then you have Kiana, who comes back quite strong. And it's basically hit the same sort of time. But every time Kenna has actually raced Laura, she's actually come out on top, which is very, I think that's very interesting. I wonder, it must be like a confidence or a mental sort of edge over Laura.
I think you might be reading too much into that, given...
I mean, maybe.
Given the races that they had this year, they were in very different places in...
Well, yes, but even still, you try and get a mental edge over your opponents all the time. Yeah. It's great that they both hit the nomination time. I suppose one of them couldn't get in that top two, obviously, so Emily Large was the unfortunate one to miss out this time around. Maybe it didn't quite happen for Emily this time around, which is unfortunate, but a 209 is still pretty good, I think. But it's just that Laura and Kiana were strong on the day. That's what
really excited to see what these two can potentially do at the Olympics later this year, because the 2.5 is fast at the top end, but if you're hitting 207s, that's potentially a final.
I think they should both be finaling with that time. If they can end up going, let's say, 2.6 high, I think they're both in a final, and then I don't know what is good enough to then medal, actually. If you take away Summer McIntosh, I think she's probably the one who's going to win it, and then, I don't know, there's Deckers, isn't there?
There's Regan Smith who goes 204.
Oh, Regan Smith as well, yes. Also, it might be quite tough to medal. But, if you can make a final, then you never know what happens.
Then, kind of the hardest... was it the hardest race to take? For me, it was. So, the men's 400 free, which was the first final of the week. And Kira, we said in our preview that this time, 3:45.43 that you had to hit was going to be hard, really hard. And man, did he get close. And I think the toughest thing to take is he dropped his PB, got within 0.2. He's under the FINA A cut.
Yes.
And still misses the Aquatics GB nomination time.
It's one of those real heartbreaking moments. Like we always knew there were going to be heartbreaking moments because obviously you had some, like in some races, there were three swimmers trying to get down into two spots. In this race, I kind of tipped Luke Turley to win. He didn't do too bad. Like 3:48 in the final is good. I wasn't expecting Kieran to be actually kind of close to the nomination time. So that kind of surprised me. But then you saw his reaction. He looks at the clock and he's just kind of looking up to the sky. And you're like, oh, so unfortunate.
We've got a really good video from that race of Dave McNulty climbing the banisters, cheering him on, which was kind of funny to see. I know Kieran was actually really positive about this performance. We spoke to him poolside. He thinks, fingers crossed, hopes that they might actually take him because of how close he got. And there are spaces still available on automatic qualifiers and discretionary.
And because he set the A time as well.
So exactly. So he can actually race it.
Yes.
Olympics. And maybe I think we'll get to the 200 later. There might be a chance that he's good enough for a heat swim.
Well, he actually secretly swam that quite well as well.
He had a really, really good meet against some very tough times and tough competitions.
Yes.
And I know he came away, it was absolutely gutting. Came away very positive from the meet.
I mean, it was a tough first final to witness, I think. Because they made such a big deal about hitting the time, didn't they? They changed the music and, everyone got behind those people that hit the time. But I think equally, people felt the disappointments or devastation that he just missed it and other people later down the line as well. Like James Wilby, for example, in the 100 breaststroke. Like, fractions
it by
off the time.
As well,
So he's now relying on discretion as well. So hopefully, fingers crossed, that he gets picked as well.
Yeah, while we're on that, I think he goes, just because you can't race Adam in heat swims over medley relay.
If there's spaces available, then you take James Wilby, I would say.
Yeah. That's both our opinions.
Yeah.
And then on the para side of night one, there were 5 nomination times hit in one race in the women's mixed classification 200 metres freestyle. Poppy Maskell, who had an absolute belter of a meet. Olivia Newman-Baronius, Louise Fidders, Jessica Jane Applegate, who may not go in this event because you can only take 3 of 1 classification. That's 3 S14s I've named before her.
Yep.
And then Susanna Hex in the S5. I know from some points of view, it was quite hard to follow the para races because people aren't used to mixed classification finals. But from a performance and elite standpoint, we'll go through the week. The para performances were out of this world. They were equal world records. They were British records. They were incredible.
Yeah, I mean, one of those swimmers was Olivia Newman-Baronius. Not in this race, it was a race later on. But we seem to be very strong at the 200 metre and 400 metre distance in this country from the para side. And just bodes well for everyone coming up through the ranks as well, because we had a younger swimmer, Iona Winifrith. She's only like 12 or 13. Not doing this event, but doing another event in breaststroke, which just, it's amazing. It's almost like a new Ellie Simmons. Like, she was about that age coming through as well. So yes, we are, we always say it, but para swimming is stronger than the able-bodied swimmers.
And their performances this week justified for me.
Oh, yeah.
Intertwined schedule of having them at the same meet as the able body and putting on one big Olympic and Paralympic selection meet.
Well, again, when you have all the crowd in the stands and they're watching these para swimmers who they probably don't know much about, and the fact they were there watching them and then learning their names and what they're capable of and realizing that actually some of these guys are hitting world records, British records all over the place.
Yeah.
It can only bode well.
Absolutely. Now, moving on to day two, I promise you guys we would be quicker than our preview podcast. We're definitely going to be quicker here. So I'm going to start off with the men's 100 backstroke on day two. Ollie Morgan absolutely blew the doors off. British record. I'm so glad we've been bigging him up for a little while now. This has been coming. I think both me and you saw this coming into the meet, that British record was fully on the cards. To take down a super suit record, though, of 2009 is no small feat.
Well, here's a question for you. Is Ollie Morgan the most exciting British swimmer right now?
No, Matt Richards. But do you reckon? I get your logic.
Yeah, I mean, because we'll talk about the 200 because both his races were insane. Honestly, so good.
I get what you're saying, but to be fair, I don't know what the limit is for Ollie is.
I know. That's the exciting thing.
He's literally like on the national stage at 16. He's only been here for like 3 or 4 years. When you say most exciting, Matt Richards is right up there with medals in every single event.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get on to Matt. Saying. Yeah, we'll get on to Matt.
I answered that probably too quickly. I am very excited by what Ollie can do.
His 100 backstroke... They had such a long pause before that race.
Well, they did, the broken lane rope.
Yeah, they had the para race first, and then it was their 100 backstroke. And before that, you had the broken lane rope, which took, how long did that take to sort out? 10, 15 minutes? So that's trying to get your mindset right and having to wait and keep yourself warm and keep yourself psyched up during that time must have been a bit of a challenge. And then he comes out, well, the para guys did it first, and then he comes out and hits a British record. With Johnny Marshall not too far behind, actually, both hitting nomination times. That is a very good effort from both of them.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about Johnny Marshall, because his times might have caught some by surprise. Hopefully, if you've listened to this podcast, not too much by surprise, because we weren't quite sure what he could do long course. We knew he was flying at yards.
Yeah, he was, yeah.
And to come in and beat the likes of Luke Greenbank, Jono Adam, Matt Ward... really, really impressive. And then we spoke to him poolside, and he hadn't trained a hard long course session since December last year.
Yeah, it's baffling, isn't it?
Which doesn't quite compute with my mind, but his underwaters are the best in Britain. I know you like Joe Litchfield, but for me, they're the best in Britain.
Yeah.
And now he's going to have a long course block heading to the Olympics, which might make him as exciting as Ollie.
Yeah, we kind of question it. Kind of similar to Julian K. Davey in the breaststroke, because they've just come off NCAAs, which is all short course yards. And then that must be what we thought was a hard transition going from yards to long course meters, because then there's far less turns. You've got to do much more swimming. You've just said that his underwaters are amazing, so we can't utilize that as much. Like, he just broke a Ryan Lochte school record as well at those NCAAs. So he's swimming well, but then the transition, we thought, would have been quite tough. Clearly not. He swam very well.
What he also said was like, I've just come back from the NCAAs, which, we spoke in the intro that the atmosphere at this meet was unrivaled to anything we've seen in Britain. NCAAs is another level.
It's a different game.
And he just came over and was like, look, I can handle that. I can handle this.
Yeah.
And it's not arrogant at all. It's just confident, which is what you need in Olympic trials, really.
Well, it worked for him. He's going to the Olympics. Yeah. So, you know, it's worked for him, and I think he should probably maintain that mindset. It is a different game swimming in America. Like, if they, we'll see their trials in June, but the show that they put on, I mean, we heard numbers that they want to try and hit on, was it ESPN or something like that? I can't remember what it was now, NBC. But they had to try and hit NBC, and they had to try and what, hit 30 million? Yeah. Oh, God, we'd love to hit those numbers, like, in this country on terrestrial TV.
I'm not sure try and get that many like eyes on. The time.
No. But, yeah, no, he's done fantastically well. Yes.
Ollie Morgan's swim, though, of 52.7, combined with Adam Peaty's 57.9, puts the medley relay in an exciting place.
It does, doesn't it? Yes.
The women's 100 backstroke, then, on the other side, how great was it to see Kathleen Dawson back in action and going back to the Olympics? Like, we said in our preview podcast, would a return to the Olympics be more impressive than her going when she was going 58 zeros? I think it might be.
Yeah, she's doing it now. We actually had a little chat with Andy Jameson, didn't we? Mm. And that was one of his highlight swims from the whole week, I think. The fact that she's gone through such a horrible injury with her back. Like, she's basically been out of the water for a number of years, really. And it's only just started to come back to form now. She smashed up the heats really, really well. The underwater seems to be back, which is brilliant.
First sub 60 in the heats, wasn't it?
Since it was, and then she backed up again in the finals, hit the nomination time. Very exciting, and just very happy for her, you know? She obviously deserves it. She works hard. Kind of a little bit shocked that the other two girls didn't actually go sub-minute. I really thought they would have done.
Yeah, I think this was... We saw a lot of it later on in the week. This was the Olympic nerves.
Yeah,
and the tension that just... Yeah. Both Mehdi and Lauren are capable of faster swims. Like, had it not been in maybe that environment, that arena, it would have happened for them. It's just the way it falls. And it happened to so many swimmers later on in the week that just...
It's almost last chance saloon for some of them. So
yeah,
really
it was quite hard
to
watch at times. But
it's almost like, you know, when you try too hard and it just doesn't happen, you don't relax into your swim. Yeah. I think that might be part of it. But I think some people have actually said that Olympic trials... is actually harder than doing the Olympics themselves.
Yeah.
So
I think Dave McNulty said that to us after like day one or day two.
Yeah.
Stuff like
well, it's a pressure cooker, isn't it? It's just the tension is so high because you do all this training to go to the Olympics and this is it. Yeah. This is the moment. So I think we saw that, especially on the relay events, your sort of hundreds and of each stroke. That seemed to be a catching point, but it didn't seem to be a problem for the backstroke swimmers, both male and female.
Then elsewhere on day two, we had three really tough nomination standards for the swimmers to hit. So we had the women's 1500 meters, the women's 200 meters breaststroke, and the men's 200 meters butterfly. So I'm going to start with the 1500, and Amelie retains her British title. She's now a double British champion at the age of just 14. I think she's turned 15 now we're recording this podcast, which is a fantastic achievement. And I almost think it could be a blessing in disguise that she's not got that automatic selection spot. She might still go.
Well,
there's a lot of people we were speaking poolside were like, take her for the experience. She wasn't that far off. She's PBing every time she swims. She didn't PB in the 1500 because I think she put a little bit of pressure on herself.
Yeah. She did say that as well, didn't she?
She did. Yeah. But a hugely encouraging swim to back up your British title last year in front of a very different environment.
Yes, I think so. I'm in two minds with whether would want her to go to Paris. I'd like her to go for that experience and then hopefully, because they always say you always perform better on your second Olympics. So is it worth getting the first one kind of out the way to then be better when she's 19, when LA comes round.
Sure,
but then at
sure.
the same time, she's, 15, which is extremely young. And then are you putting too much pressure on her at that too early age? So I'm kind of conflicted. I don't know what the answer is.
Me and you both know Aquatics GB, formerly British Swimming, and they do not take people to the Olympics for experience. There's this whole new philosophy. I would be pretty surprised if they took her. If they did, I would see them as turning a corner and then hope that every relay goes.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So yeah, if you're going to give one person the benefit of the doubt, then you've got to do kind of the same.
If you're taking people for experience,
else.
it's you're opening the door which is changing a big philosophy for the Olympics.
Yeah.
But either way, like, her future in this sport's massive. Like, I'm so excited to see what happens. And like I said, it might be a tiny bit of a blessing that she didn't hit the time in this, because it took the weight off for the rest of the meet. We saw a PB in the 800.
Mm-hmm.
And she can only go upwards from here, which is the best thing.
Well, I think it's good that she's got competition from Fleur Lewis as
well.
Yeah. She came off her altitude, which I think was more of a trial run, if you like, because Toby Robinson did the same thing.
Toby did it well. They came back.
Yeah, he did do well, didn't he? I think Fleur was a little bit disappointed with her times, because they weren't PBs as far as I'm aware, or they were very, very small ones. So she wanted to do better from that side of view. But again, it's just the pressure. I think if she were to race again like tomorrow, the times might be better. But it's just the environment, the setting that she was in, potentially. But there's still more to come from her, definitely.
And then in the other two events that we spoke about, Kara Hanlon won the women's 200 meters breaststroke. Josh Gammon won the 200 meters fly. Both of them really, really gutsy swims, like, from all around. So Josh Gammon had literally no one to race and still went a 1:56 for two fly, which is a massive drop in PB for him.
Yeah.
And actually, he proved how good it was for his 100 later on in the week. And then Kara Hanlon had one hell of a race with Vang Harrod Evans, who went out at a 1:08 and just got told by Bradley Hay, just go out and hang on. I can only imagine the pain as she finished fourth to see Kara go past. And Kara's 2:24 wasn't quite enough to get the nomination standard. But that nomination standard was fast, like, it's compared tough, to where their PBs were.
Yeah, they had a better shot in the 100, which we'll get onto later on. But the 200 was a very tough time to hit. They would both have to hit substantial PBs. Ang Harrod is more of a 100 swimmer anyway, more than a 200. So I was more looking at sort of Lily Booker to see if she would come through.
I think her time was good.
The time was about on PB again, roughly speaking. So the girls actually swam really well. It's just that the time is just tough. I mean, they were a second and a half off. Well, Kara was, then Lily was a little bit further off as well. But it was a good effort. And then Josh Gammon in the fly, actually, one of, I suppose, really, if you kind of fine pick it, that was actually a very strong swim, and one of the strongest swims of the week based on PBs. You say he had no one to race. Like, Tom Bealey was going in as fast as swimmer, for fastest entry going into the race. But he pulled out a 56.9, which is amazing.
Yeah, he beat Tom Bealey by 3 seconds-ish.
Yeah. Well, his last 50 was actually very good.
Yeah.
Like you said, which boded well for the 100 later on, which again, we'll get to.
And then para on night two, we had Stephen Clegg get his first nomination time of the week and William Ellard in the 100 meters backstroke. Both of those guys dominated the Paralympic selection all week long.
Yeah.
I have to say, Stephen Clegg is one of the, like, technically best swimmers to watch in the water.
Which amazes me, because he's visually impaired. Like, how on earth do you swim? No, but
I think that's what makes it brilliant, because he can't go absolutely full throttle like half of these guys and lose track of anything, which is why when I saw him later on in the week sprint the 50 freestyle, you're like, wow, that's just gliding through the water.
It's very impressive, isn't it? Very impressive. And then Will Ellard was just as, it's not more impressive. He equaled Rhys Dunn's 200 free record,
our preview we said was bonkers.
He just nailed it. I mean, he's able to do water strokes, backstroke. He's had a decent fly as well. And then, of course, the freestyles where he absolutely nailed it. He had one of the best meets probably ever in his swimming career. And when he gets to the Paralympics,
it might go better.
It might go. Yeah, exactly. I assume it's going to go better in Paris. So, yeah, watch out for those two names when the Paralympics come around.
And then in the mixed classification, we have Alice Tai securing her Paralympic nomination standard. She missed out on Tokyo because of injury. Hopefully, touch wood, she's finally going, because she is a superstar in the sport of just swimming, full stop. Poppy Masco also got another nomination time. Olivia Newman-Baronius, another one. Megan Neave and Georgia Sheffield. So, like we said, the para guys were smashing it out of the park straight away. Loads of nomination standards.
Those five girls you've just mentioned all hit, and then 100 backstroke, they all hit points over 900, which is massive. That is a big, big score. So, like we said, the para swimmers are extremely strong in this country.
Absolutely. So, day three then, and this was the first of the big, big head-to-heads in the men's swimming. The 100 meters freestyle. And boy, oh boy, did it not disappoint. Hey, Dan. And
it was quick.
We got a prediction right for once. I'm going to, like, we don't bring it up when we get predictions wrong, but for us to say Matt Richards and Duncan Scott make it 1-2, I was relatively pleased.
It is nice when a prediction comes in. We were on Paul's side, like, yes! And actually, Alex Cahoon, because you said this way back when. Alex Cahoon making the relay.
Do you know, I said it in a podcast when we had on Connor Andrew, yes. One of his old coaches at Loughborough. Now, in the final edit, it didn't actually make it in because I was just like, this is too bold for me to say. And it was like December last year. But I said, Alex Cahoon is making the Olympics somewhere. Whether it's in the 4x1 or if it's in the 53, he's making it.
Well, he wasn't far away in the 50 either, was he? I mean,
and he dropped some massive PBs across the course of that day to go a 48.2.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so, so impressive. And that relay team now looks strong.
It does, doesn't it? And even Matt said that there's more to come. He didn't execute his plan.
Well, he was really perfectly. Not happy.
No, he wasn't happy. Like 47.8 is a good time. But he's probably looking at that based on, because he wants to go British record, which is his, 47.4. And maybe if he put all of his the details in his race and executes it like he wanted to, then he probably would have been on track to do that. But for the relay, are we now? I think we're going to be on the podium.
Okay, we're going to be on the podium. You're going to say we're favourites. Do not say that.
No, are we favourites? I don't know. It's hard to say.
Haven't raced yet.
It's hard to say. But we're in good shape. When you've got three guys going sub 48, and then hopefully by that point as well, after another training block, you've got Alex going sub 48 as well. So all four guys hopefully go 47s. That's good. That's exciting.
It was an absolute belter of a race to watch as well.
It was, wasn't it?
And for me, it wasn't even like the best swim of night three. I think that came in the men's 400 metres IM when Max Litchfield broke a British record. And another one we said maybe another keep an friction. Eye on.
Yeah. Oh, we predicted Ollie Morgan's 100 back British record as well. So we had a good couple of first days, actually, before the shocks started to happen later on down the line. But Max's swim was amazing. 4.91, right? 4.91.
That time would have won gold in Tokyo.
It would have done. In Tokyo, yes, because that was a slow final, wasn't it?
Yeah, now it won't win gold.
But not now. I mean, it's very different now. Marchand's like taken over.
But that does put him fourth in active swimmers. The only four ahead of him are Marchand, Carson Foster, and Lewis Clairbutt. So, can Max finally break his duck as two fourths the Olympics? I really hope so.
If he hits a fourth again, I think I don't know what I'd do. I'd be not very happy. I mean, he would be pretty distraught as well, I think. Yeah. But if he's able to go that sort of time or find a second or so when Paris comes around, then he's got a great chance. He has a chance at a medal every time he gets in the pool anyway. He's a world-class swimmer. And that was a world-class swim.
Yep. Women's 50 metres freestyle then, another Olympic standard hit for Anna Hopkin. Yep. She really is the sprinting class of this country. Behind her, this final was full of teenagers.
It was
really fun to see. Like, we spoke to Anna afterwards, and she was like, yeah, you know, like, this is good for sprinting in this country. I've really got to be on it, because Eva Akaro, she picked up two silvers at this meet.
She did, yeah.
She went sub-25 for the first time. As much as Anna is the mainstay, I think there's going to be some names coming through over the next few years.
Oh, definitely. They're already here. The fact that Eva is 18 and she's going sub-25 for the first time, who knows how much she can drop that by.
Yep.
We always said that the event that she should focus on the most would be the 100. We'll get onto that later on. She did very well in that as well. But this 50 is, you've got to be perfect. And when you've got the likes of Anna and Ben Proud, that we'll talk about later as well, who are, Anna's not a 50 meter specialist, but she's got the stroke for a 50 meter with the straight arm.
Oh, I'd argue she might be.
What? A 50 meter special. Well,
specialist implies that she only races.
She's
very good at the 50.
She is, and she had a very good 100 as well. But in terms of this race, I mean, the 50 meter freestyle internationally is tough. I mean, you've got Sarah Sostrom, who's just flying at the moment, and you've got the Aussies as well. But again, if you get a final in the 50 meter races, you've got a lane.
You've got
a chance. So just got to nail it on the day.
Elsewhere on night three, more Olympic standards hit in the men's 1500. Dan Jervis was really happy to see him hit that one. He put a lot of pressure on himself, making that his only race of the meet. And then the women's 4am, Freya Colbert and Katie Shanahan both going well beneath, and Freya Colbert going a 4:34.
Yeah. It's impressive, isn't it?
Yeah. It was one of those times where, a little bit like Adam, had he have swam a 58.0, the world probably wouldn't have sat up. And maybe the world quite hasn't sat up because Freya hasn't gone a 4:33.
Yeah.
But
I see what you're saying.
I think she very much is in podium contention.
I think so. Again, if you take out Summer McIntosh, because I think the gold is kind of gone because she's a bit good. And then there are other names, like Katie Grimes is up there. But like Freya is there or thereabouts. Like she could easily come away with a bronze in Paris. So that's exciting. And then
she's
Katie
got another block
at
altitude.
Yeah. Katie races one as well. And I get the feeling that she wanted more. She was kind of on PB. I think she was just
from
beneath
this
it. Yeah. So like she swam well. She's on lifetime best, but I think she expected more. Not just on the 400 IM, I think on the other events as well. Something didn't quite happen for her. But she's going, I assume, she's going to go to the Olympics here.
Imagine being so good that it didn't quite happen for you and you're going to the Olympics.
Yeah, but, I know.
Like, it's not even a selection debate that she's going.
She's going to go. And it's a classic head-to-head. Like those two girls are like 10 seconds ahead of everyone else. So it was a great race. And then Dan Jervis in the 1500s, it's always a pleasure to watch him race. I'd love him to hit the British record one day because that needs to go. It's 20 years old.
Do you know what? He got so much closer than I thought he was going to, which I just didn't. The British record wasn't quite on my mind until he started swimming. And I was like, oh, what is the British record again? Oh, he did get close last year. Oh, he's close again this year.
Yeah, he's quite close. Yeah. I spoke to Adam and he was just like, we weren't really focusing on the British record. It's just about qualifying. Yeah, and he was well on track for doing that. I mean, he was underneath it by, 7, 8 seconds or so. Mm. So he was miles underneath it. That was never really the problem. And then you had Toby Robinson hitting a sub 15 for the first time. He had a very good meet, didn't he?
Really, really good meet. Heading into Paris and his open water campaign, the man needs to stay at altitude. He needs to live at the top of a mountain because it worked. There's some swimmers who come off altitude and can swim fast. It's harder for others to adapt. I know. I think we spoke to some of the Edinburgh guys when they were up or just come down. And some of them raced really well. Some of them decided not to race at all because they knew it was going to be dreadful. And it really did work for him. Sub 15 for the first time is great. He just misses the nomination standard.
I know, such a shame.
I wouldn't be surprised if they let him race because he's already going.
But to the open water, yes.
Yeah, but it does count as a different number, if that makes sense. So you've got 30 for the pool you're allowed to take. He would be included in that, even though he's selected for open water.
I personally,
he's already going to Paris. He's already got a hotel room. He's already got a ticket. If you've got a discretionary space at the end, let him race it.
Yeah, again, if there's space. Maybe at the end here, we'll go through some of the picks that we would actually like to see go as discretionary picks. And it'd be good to see him race. If he gets another stint at altitude, and he dropped about 10 seconds, didn't he? On his lifetime best here. So if he's able to find, another, let's say, 5 seconds and puts him at 14:49, then that's a final, isn't it? 14:49, I'd probably say so. Yeah.
At the very least, he's got a good pool speed for his open water campaign, which we know now is hugely important to medal or challenge in the open water.
Well, I like the fact that he basically followed Dan. He knows what Dan's tactic is, and it's always to get out there strong, and then he holds his pace throughout the rest of the 100s.
Yeah.
And he did that basically to a T. And I know Dan got away from him at the end a little bit, but actually Dan swam very well there.
And then in the para side, we had the mixed classification 100 freestyle for the guys, where Stephen Clegg hit another Paralympic nomination standard. And if I believe correctly, Will Ellard equaled a world record in the heats, but couldn't swim it in the final because it's not a para event.
Para event, yes.
Which is some achievement. And I think that was the only para nomination times hit on night 3, if I remember correctly.
Well, there were also the 50-meter freestyle for the women. So Alice Tai yet again with another Paralympic standard where she went 30.63 for an S8 swimmer is quite stunning. And then Scarlett Humphrey as well. In fact, the Humphrey sisters actually did very well. Visually impaired, so they're S11s. And they ended up hitting quite a few nomination times. Well, Scarlett did anyway, and Eliza hit one in a 400 later on down the line. Very exciting, again, from that point of view. And it always amazes me because they have to have the tapper at the end of the lengths to be able to do the turns.
It's an incredible skill.
It's a fantastic skill.
Do you know, 100% we should do a video with some able-bodied athletes having blackout
having a try
and trying to give that a go. A few broken noses might happen, but I think it'd be worth it for some content.
Some scrapes on the lane ropes, yeah.
Just to show the talent of these girls and what they genuinely have to go through.
Yeah, yeah. That would be fascinating. I wouldn't. It wouldn't work for me.
Well, I was going to sign you up as volunteer, actually, Dan.
Oh, great. Thanks for that, yeah.
Day four, then, of the Aquatics GB Swimming Championships. And this is where things started to get a little weird. There were some really tight swims. So Jacob Peters in the 100 meters butterfly hit the nomination standard in the heats.
Yes.
Looked incredibly good.
He did.
And then the final, this weird thing that happens at Olympic trials happened. And it was really hard to watch. I know there were tears from his coach, from what I've heard. And I think we spoke to Dave very quickly afterwards, and he just couldn't explain it. He said he's going to have to sit down and understand what happened.
Yep.
But full credit goes to Joe Litchfield for taking an opportunity that arose to him. And like going into this meet, he wasn't actually going to race.
He wasn't entered, was he? No.
He entered it after the Edinburgh International and pulled out of the 2am because obviously the 2am stacked in this country, and we'll get to it. It was the end of this session.
Yep.
So for him to come in and go to the Olympics in 100 butterfly, last Olympics he went for the 2am and 100 free relay.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the man is the definition of versatile.
Yes, he is. It's just an amazing story that he wasn't entered to do this race like 2 months ago or so.
He hadn't even trained for it.
No, and then he pulls out of the bag. I know there's like Jacob and maybe Jimmy should have gone like low 51s because that's what they were supposed to do. There were some people on Paul's side thinking that Jacob might even break the British record, which was, I thought, was a little bit
ambitious.
Ambitious, yes, that's a good word, ambitious, because that record is like 50.4 or something like that, 50.6. Yeah, a bit quick. I mean, I spoke to Jacob after his heat swim, and he said, that was the easiest swim he's ever done, like really smooth. Mm. Hit the nomination time, so it should have been like plain sailing. And he says, I want to go 50 point. That was the aim. But I just wonder if, like, again, like, do they try too hard and they almost tense up a little bit, and so it's nervous energy, and so they don't have enough on the back end. But like you say, Joe Litchfield came through to win, and then Josh Gammon, who's the 200 fly specialist, I thought, has just knocked out a 51.8. So maybe watch out for him later on in the future as well.
There's a few interesting selection conundrums with this 100 butterfly, because Joe won. He's going for the medley relay. There's no doubt about that. He doesn't have the A time to swim the individual. I believe just Jacob does off the heat swim, but Aquatics GB wouldn't let him do it because of that.
Yeah.
The only solution you have, if you don't think Joe's fast enough, is have someone else in the team who's already qualified swim it, which would be Jimmy. And given Jimmy swam a 52 point, it's a bit of a risk.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Joe gets full reins at it at this moment in time, unless some discretion happens.
I think it would be a bad look if you then suddenly change it and put Jimmy on the medley after coming, I think he came fifth in the end. And you're like, well, you've come fifth at the Olympic trials, but yet you've got, let's say, discretion for now to go into the medley relay, whereas Joe actually performed on the day to get the win. Yeah. So he deserved that spot. It's a difficult one. I mean, we were all scratching our heads like, what are they going to do? Ultimately, we're quite lucky that we don't have to make that decision. But that is a real head scratcher.
You know what? It's not something I want to discuss on this podcast. I'm just going to leave it till next week's episode when we know the team and we can say, this is what they're doing.
Then it makes sense.
Hopefully it makes sense. Should we talk about the 2am then? The one that Joe pulled out of, the one that Duncan Scott goes a 155.9 this time of year. He was pleased with that sort of time. Yeah. I know he was, especially this early in the season. Held off Tom Dean on the freestyle leg. It never looked in doubt, actually.
No. He doesn't have a weak stroke. Does he have a backstroke? Is that his weak stroke? But I mean,
we were trying to work it out on Paul's side, because last year we thought the breaststrokes where Tom's getting him.
Yeah.
And then at the Edinburgh International, he cranked out a 101, 100 breaststroke. We're like, yeah, nope, definitely not the breaststroke. Yeah, we were wrong about that.
Yeah. No, the breaststroke is actually what pulled him away from Tom Dean in the end. It's like freestyle-wise, they're basically the same. They probably hit the same similar split on the last 50. But the breaststroke is just amazing at the moment. Like, how can you be... I don't know what I'm about to say. He's a 200 meter specialist, like 200 free specialist, but he can do everything in a moment. To go 101 for 100 meter breaststroke and not do it as a full time stroke and event is some swim. But 155.59 is great.
We had a fun discussion on poolside, thinking what event could Duncan Scott not final in? Yeah. And it was no, 53 he could probably final in 100. Yep. Two, yeah. Four, yeah.
Four, probably,
I've got no idea about eight beyond. Probably just the two back would be the one. And now I've said that, he's going to race it next year at Edinburgh and final and win that.
Yeah, and probably knock out like a 159 or something stupid like that, yeah.
Oh, just... This week, he really showed his class and back to his best. He got three events, three individual nomination times.
Yeah.
He's on all the relays yet again.
Yeah.
It was really good to see him back racing fast. And
yeah, he's a very special swimmer. Very, very talented. And we're lucky that he's British, basically, that we get to see him as often as we do.
And while we said in the 100 meters butterfly, like, tense moments happen when it comes to like Olympic trials, it doesn't happen to Duncan, especially with the atmosphere that was there. He was actually lapping it up.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he used the word mint when we spoke to him on the interview. He loves the occasion. He loves the buzzing atmosphere. And I think he thrived off it, to be honest with you. And that's the reason why he hit the times that he did.
Can these two challenge for medals when it comes to Paris and the 2IM? I know they both won world medals. Can they both get on the podium, Duncan and Tom?
I'm going to say yes to Duncan. And then Tom is difficult. I'm trying to think like who the top three would be. So you have Machard there, Duncan, Carson Foster.
Wang.
Shun Wang, who's the Olympic champion. So it's a tough... I think it might be a bit tough. But I think Duncan's got a great shot. If he's going 155.9 at this time of year, he went... I'm trying to think what he did at the last Olympics. 55.2, was it, I think?
Yeah, it was
quite... So if he can shave off half a second, then he's in the same sort of time. Like, the world record is a 154.00. Mm. So if he's able to hit a high 54, that's a medal. That's... Yeah. I'm pretty sure of that.
I'd say so.
And I'm pretty sure that should be his target, I would say.
Yeah, yeah.
Why not?
Okay, elsewhere on night four, another little propulsion swimming nugget and prediction that we said going into this. Honey Osran in the two backstrokes. She didn't let us down.
Yep.
208.37, faster than she did at Bucks. Underneath the nomination standard, she's on the train to Paris.
Yeah. Another good one when a prediction comes in. We're just like, yes. She did really well, actually. I think she took it out quite strong.
Yeah, she did say too strong.
Yeah, a bit too strong. And then when you've got Katie coming behind you, who is quite good at the whole back end thing, it was maybe a little bit too risky, but she did say after Bucks that there was more in a tank on that first 100.
Yeah, but she went too far. She went out on a 101 this time, which was way too far. I did, because her time in the 100 was a minute point. And you see a 101 and you're just there like, oh, this is really going to hurt.
This is going to be painful. She held on, which is the first thing. She got underneath the combination time. She got underneath the nomination time and she held off Katie. So ultimately, I suppose the plan worked. So can't really complain.
Yeah, she said the plan will be different in Paris. She needs to take about half a second off that first 50 so that she has got some legs at
the end.
Has
a bit left, yeah.
Really encouraging behind her, Holly McGill, going a 209.1. There's some strength in depth in backstroke. 200 back especially. I think for Holly actually to be 0.2 off the nomination standard went under the radar everywhere. Like in terms of media, in terms of in-venue, she was a little bit closer to Katie than I think Katie would be comfortable with.
Yeah, well, actually, I think the whole Sterling lot actually had a very good meet really in general, Holly being one of them. So whatever Steve and Bradley are doing up there in Scotland is working right now.
We should probably have another visit, don't we?
We do say that quite a lot. Yeah, yeah,
it does work. Then on the women's 400 meters freestyle, another one which was incredibly tough for any nomination standard really to be hit. A 4.04 is right up there in terms of world standard. There's only a few swimmers in the world that will go faster. But Holly Hibbert wins a national title, and I think we spoke to her coach Jamie Main, who said she hadn't actually swam a 400 free for, or raced a 400 free for 20 months leading into it. So that makes that even more impressive. And it was a nice moment with Amelie Bloksage as well, after who got silver and an age group record. And I think Holly Hibbert is quietly a little idol to her.
Yeah, she is.
An
yeah.
inspiration growing up. So that was a nice moment to see.
Looking on her Instagram, she's very much like, oh my God, I just swam with Holly Hibbert. So yeah.
That's
what it should be about, you know? Amelie is still 14, 15, you know? So she's still very young and looking up to those type of swimmers only bodes well. Fleur Lewis was there finishing off or rounding up the medals just there. So it's a good race, but the time that they had to hit...
a really good race.
Yeah, the time they had to hit almost put a bit of a downer on the race, because we kind of knew that that time wasn't going to be hit. But we knew that the race would be amazing, you know?
I'd go the other way. I think it took a lot of pressure off and they just enjoyed it.
Well, there's another way. That is another way of looking at it, I suppose. But of course, when this meet happens, the whole idea is to try and get to Paris. That's the idea, I suppose.
Okay.
But the race itself was great. Amazing, actually. But the time was just very tough. I don't know why it's as fast as that. I don't even know, like... I think
4.04 makes a final.
I don't know if, like, 4 or 5 swimmers can actually go under that time. I'm sure... Well, I can't think of any top of my head.
I can think of 4 straight off.
Yeah, 4 straight off. But then after that, I don't know. I don't know. But, I'm sure that there must be. Obviously, otherwise the time wouldn't be like that. But, happy for Holly. That was a good swim.
On the para side of the 400 meters freestyle for the women, like you said on the day before review, this is where like the strength of British swimming really comes through, or should I say Aquatics GB? I'm not going to get used to that. It's really my my reflex has just, it's like walking backwards for a day.
Yeah, I'm the same.
I think we had 5 women hit the para nomination standard in Brock Quinston, Tony Shaw, Alice Tice, Scarlett Humphrey, and Eliza Humphrey in the heats. Heats-wise, it's... So I know we've said, like, heats times for the Olympic guys isn't good enough. For the para side, it is, prefer you to do it in the final. But I would... I'd love to see Eliza and Scarlett go. We caught a very, very nice moment of her dad
proud dad moment.
He found out that both his daughters had secured para nomination times was great. This is a big para race, and it's a depth of this country, like you said.
Yeah, when it comes to heat swims for the para swimmers, I do think that they get selected based on heats as well as finals. Like Tully Kearney hit a time in the heat, but then didn't do it in the final as well. So I assume she would go for that race as well. But because the 400 free is a big para event on the para side, we seem to do very well at it across all classifications, like S6 all the way up down to S13. And again, the points that these girls hit is massive. I think there's a race later on another day where we do even better. Like we hit more times across more categories, but we'll get to that.
Elsewhere on the para side for day 4, we had the men's 100 butterfly, where those two, Stephen Clegg, Will Ellard, secured their para nomination times. And in the 2IM, Will Ellard, in the second race of the night, got another Paralympic nomination standard along with Rhys Darby and Cameron Burncombe.
I feel like we're going to be repeating these names a few times because Will Ellard basically just nailed every race he's swam. You know, Stephen Clegg, we're going to mention that name so often. Alice Tye, we mentioned the same names over and over again, but they are just incredible swimmers.
A nice little kind of tidbit or fact, if people want it, about Will Ellard. In the 50 metres freestyle, it isn't a para event, but he's so good he qualified for British champs in that event and raced it on day 5.
Yeah, mad, isn't it?
Which... that's so, so impressive.
Yeah.
Should we get to day 5 then, Dan? Because day 5 was the day where British swimming's fastest ever man got in the water in Ben Proud. I expected him to swim fast. Did I expect a 21.25? No.
No. No. I was asking a few of the media lot, like, what kind of time are we kind of hoping for here? And there are a few people saying like 21.5, 21.6, something along those lines, 21 mid basically. But no one said 21.2. That came as a very big shock. And I think the reaction of the people on Paul's side, the people in the crowd, was all the same. it was amazing. And then the fact behind them, you had three other swimmers go sub 22 as well. My God, what a race that was. And you watch it on the broadcast, because I've watched it back now, and Ben was miles ahead.
I know.
Oh, my gosh. I'm very excited for Paris now. If he's going to do something along those lines, maybe a little bit quicker, he's back to his very best. He's not far off his lifetime best now.
Hey, look, we know the pressure of an environment in sprinting terms as well when it comes to a final of a major event. A 21.25 would probably win the Olympics if you swam that.
Yeah, it's definitely a medal, sure. Yeah, yeah.
Right up there.
Yeah.
I have never seen someone swim that fast in person. It was a pleasure.
No, it was amazing. And we were speaking to one of the journalists saying, like, what's the fastest time ever swam at this pool? And I think it was that one. Mm. So that was the fastest swim you'll ever see, maybe, at the London pool ever. It was, like you say, a pleasure. It was just amazing.
Behind him, we had Matt Richards hitting the Olympic standard in the 50. We spoke to him. He's intending to race this.
Yeah, honestly, I wasn't expecting him to do that. I spoke to his dad, and he was like, he was targeting that. I'm like, oh, wow. 21.8. Like, I thought it was impressive when he went his 21.9, was it last year?
Yeah.
And he's found another 0.1, which is probably why he's able to do the 100 and 200 as well as he does, because he's got that speed at the start.
Easy speed. If you can hit a 21.8 and then also swim a 200-meter freestyle in a low 144, you're a very, very good swimmer.
Yeah, yeah. And then obviously Alex Cahoon going sub 22, David Cumblish going sub 22.
Sub 22, yeah.
My gosh, like, are there any? I'm sure there must be other nations that go this sort of speed across
America
the depth. They must do.
Like, they'll be right there with this.
But we
sort
haven't
of level.
Had this forever, have we? I can't remember the time when we've had four people go sub 22.
No.
Never has that happened.
I think this is one of the only times.
Yeah.
Elsewhere on night five, then, it was another night where it was slightly slower, disappointing times. Disappointing is a strong word, actually, because some of these nomination times are tough. The men's 200 meters breaststroke, it just didn't quite happen for James Wilby and Greg Butler. Both missed out. They went 210s. The nomination standard was a 208.9. They're going to have to wait for discretionary picks. I think if James Wilby goes, he won't get the chance to race a two breaststroke again. I think he sticks to the 100 going into the Olympics.
I mean, it's such
just a little bit too far off.
You and I both know that if he goes into a final, he's got every chance of doing very well and potentially meddling. I think the highlights would be that European final when he was out in lane eight. Yeah. Like, he wasn't supposed to win that. And then he goes and pulls out a 208 and then wins it. It would be a shame if he didn't race it. But, you know, he's a good second off this nomination time, which is quite far, unfortunately.
Especially
didn't quite happen for him.
The world is going 205s.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, quite far, isn't it? He was close on 100, so maybe he gets discretion for that. But I think I'm leaning to agreeing with you here. I don't know if he swims this 200, unfortunately.
No. Then the women's 100 meters butterfly, another really tough time in terms of like British level. A 57.1 was what they needed. Kiana McInnes gets the closest in a 57.9. I'm still pretty unsure about the women's medley relay going, which would be her only chance of racing it. I don't think they do take.
See, I hate the idea of that.
No, I agree, but I just don't think it adds up. The times, like, we get to the 100 breaststroke later on, and it just doesn't quite compute.
Yeah, they were off it, to be fair. But I like the idea of, like, every country should take a relay within reason. Yeah. Like, they've got to hit a certain time. Like, the GB girls, they will probably make a final, but they just won't challenge for a medal of the times that we've seen when you've got China, Australia, America, you know, the top countries. It would be a massive shame, but that time was tough, like a 57.1. And I think I said to you on the preview podcast that a lot of our girls are more 200 specialists than hundreds.
Yeah,
good to see Lucy Greave start to make a bit of an impact, actually. That's another sterling summer. Yep. I think she might come through. That would be very interesting.
She's definitely more suited to the one. So I think in a few more years' time, we will be mentioning her probably in this event. Although, I mean, Kiana beat us. So Kiana's
honestly,
all round.
After the heat swim, I thought Harriet had a fantastic chance. I thought, I've missed a trick there. Whoopsie. And I even had Graham come up to me and say, how have you not picked Harriet to win this event? It might have been the whole pressure thing, because it's such a big event for the medley relay, et cetera, et cetera.
She did take it out hard.
She did. Well, she put herself in the strongest position, I guess, but it didn't quite happen first. She actually missed out on a medal in the end. Kiana's the only one to go sub 58.
And on that, I want to pick things up from those two tough events on day five. So I've saved these two ones to the end. The men's 800 meters freestyle. Toby Robinson gets his first ever British title. He's had to play second fiddle to the likes of Hector, Dan Jervis. So really happy to see him racing this one. 7:51 as well was a pretty good time when he got no one to race. Another PB.
Yeah, it was a PB. Yeah. He's better suited to the longer distances, obviously, because he's a water swimmer. Just a shame that he didn't hit the time in the 15, although we kind of feel like he might go for that. But the 800 time is ridiculous. So fast. But you only have to see the likes of the international scenery at the moment, Dan Whiffen being the one who's setting the standard at the moment. So, it's a tough race to try and qualify for, I think.
Yeah, and then another event that's going to be tough to make a final come the Olympics is the women's 200 meters IM.
Yeah.
But Abby Wood might have just put her best foot forward in making that final. 208.91 these Aquatics GB Swimming Championships is a personal best. First time in the 208s. And exactly the time to be doing it when the world is swimming 208s, 207s.
Yeah, yeah. She actually had a fantastic meet all round, actually. Like, 100 was solid, 203 was solid, and then this 200 IM, I think, was her standout race.
Yeah.
To go sub 209 for the first time does put her in that field of swimmers. We'll do a video about the 200 IM, I think, somewhere down the line.
Good.
But it's stacked. Like, to make the final is an achievement, let alone, like, win a medal. Abby's in with a shot, and am I surprised that Freya was the one to sort of out-touch Katie and hit the nomination time as well?
Not by the time we got to day five. By this point in the meet, the pressure was gone, completely gone, and she was just loving life and loving being at the meet. We got a clip of her and Abby on the blocks in the heats just having some fun.
Yeah.
Which Aquatics GB nicely copied off us.
They did. we won't talk about that, though.
No, we won't. But by this point, she'd won the 2-3 in a very good time. Mm. And then she'd hit her event, the 4IM, in a very, very good time. Yeah. So for her to go a 2:10.4, it didn't really surprise me. I think going in, I was like, yeah, you know what? I think Freya is the second place swimmer here. The way the meet was planning out for her.
Well, you look at the final of the 2IM. And we've already spoken about how deep it is on the international scene, but actually on the British scene, when you've got Abby Freya Casey, then you've got Leah Schlossen.
And Alicia Wilson.
Yeah, Alicia Wilson. It's actually quite deep. I think it's kind of gone under the radar because obviously the men's 203 is the one that's talked about the most, but actually the women's 200 IM is getting there as well.
The deepest women's event.
Yeah, I think so. I agree. Yes, I think so. Yeah.
And then elsewhere on the para side for night five, then we had a world record, an equal world record. How many meets have you gone to where you've seen two equal world records, Dan?
Zero. Well, one. The one I've just
one
been
now.
In. Yeah.
Olivia Newman Baronius hits the 100 meters butterfly world record.
Yeah.
In a 103.3 for the S14 category. Paralympic nomination standard. We will see her in Paris.
Yes.
Poppy Maskell behind her. Faye Rogers hits her nomination time in an event where she very much could win para gold.
Yep.
And Callie Ann Warrington as well should essentially make the team for the Paralympics. So the depth and the names, we've mentioned Poppy Maskell before and Olivia, but Faye's come through, Callie Ann's come through.
Yeah.
These are new names as well, really, for the Paralympic scene. So while we've always been good at Paralympics, I feel, British swimming as a whole, There's new names coming through consistently.
All of which have a good chance of meddling. I mean, if you're hitting, again, over 900 points, if you're hitting a world record, then you're pretty, you're looking quite good for gold, aren't you?
Yeah.
But yeah, all those names you've mentioned, plus all the other names you've mentioned before, they all have strong chances of medals.
Yeah.
So yeah, it just bodes very, very well. It's amazing.
And then in the women's mixed classification 50 backstroke, Tully Kearney hit a British record.
Yep.
And obviously that's a Paralympic standard as well. And also Ellie Challis hit her Paralympic nomination time, which will send both of those girls to Paris. We've already said Tully's going.
Yep.
But they are world-class para athletes. And I hope people in London and people on TV actually appreciate what a pleasure it is to watch those two race.
Yeah, because they're in the lower classifications. So Ellie is in the S3 and then Tully is in the S5. So maybe they're not in the limelight as much as someone like Alice Tai or William Ellard now, because they're not as quick as
your time-wise.
Every sort of time-wise, yes, yeah. Points-wise, it's not too dissimilar. But Ellie is doing her 50-meter backstroke in 57 seconds.
And that's not her best event. The fact that her best events actually don't race at the Paralympics puts her at a massive disadvantage.
It does. And that's the reason why she came away with so many medals at the World Championships just gone. But then the Paralympics is different. Why that is, I don't know. I can't work that out for the life of me. But either way, yeah, those girls are fantastic swimmers and people should keep an eye on them.
Elsewhere on 95, more Paralympic nomination standards hit in the women's 200 metres IM with Brock Winston winning. She won like three British titles or two British titles this week,
I think,
didn't she?
Yeah.
Maisie hit her time, Summers Newton and Poppy Maskell hit her second nomination standard of the week.
Oh, I think she hit more than two by this point.
So second of the day, sorry.
Yes, I was going to say, blimey, I don't know how many times she hit in the end. It must have been like five or six. I think she got it right on every single race. It was good to see Maisie racing. She was on world record pace because it's her world record, I think, in this race. It might have been the breaststroke, can't remember. She kind of faded away towards the end. But she's a superstar of para sport, really, isn't she? Or para swimming in this country.
Day six, then, and we saved this race for the end of the podcast last time. Let's get into it straight away.
Okay.
The men's 200 metres freestyle was incredible on so many levels.
Yep.
Because there was ecstasy. There was undoubtedly heartbreak.
Mm-hmm.
And the 4x2 relay team is as strong as it has ever been, because I'm going to start with him. Jimmy Guy is back to his very, very best in this event.
Yeah, he was only like 0.1, 0.2 off his lifetime PB. Best. And that was back from when?
8 years
when
ago.
When was that?
I think it was. Fastest eight time in 8 years ago. Is what he told us.
Just amazing. he is. He's a great swimmer, Jimmy. There were a few people saying that he actually had a chance of finishing a top two. And he was actually only 0.4.
Well, I was going to say, I thought he did.
He was only 0.4 away from actually coming second. Yeah. So any of those four guys could have easily been top four. And Jimmy just happens to be the fourth place swimmer again. I'm going to say here that I will never, ever, ever bet against Duncan ever again.
Okay.
That is a one-time thing that I've done, because I said that it would be Matt and Tom that be in the top two, but Duncan's proved me wrong, and I should never bet against Duncan.
He is a
special swimmer.
The fastest last 50 split of the field, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, he would have
charging
done.
Home. He very nearly got Matt.
Yeah.
Like, Matt was breathing the wrong way and I don't think really saw him. Duncan was charging.
Yeah, if it was another 5 meters, I think Duncan would have won it in the end.
Well, he was only 600
behind. Yeah.
Which, like, is Matt will get the headlines, but Duncan's right there, where he needs to be ahead of Paris. And I know he was disappointed to get a silver at Tokyo, and he's now got his shot at getting it back, or getting one up again.
Well, there's every chance that both those guys medal again at the Olympics. I say it again, because Matt didn't do the Olympics individually last time. But he's got a fantastic chance. If you've got guys going 144, let's say mid right now, this time of year, another training block. I know we bigged up the time and I was expecting like a 143 or something.
I don't think I was.
Ultimately, it's just about winning the race. The time was irrelevant in the end. It was just the race. Get your hand on the wall. And Matt Richards, I think we should probably talk about him, because he is a very special swimmer. Like, he is very, very good
as well.
Yeah, and we should probably...
Somebody's just 20, 21.
Yeah, we should probably appreciate actually how good he is to be able to do a 50, 100 and 200. And I think he's like the only swimmer to go like sub 22, sub 48 and sub 145 for those events. Is something very special. And we should be very lucky that he is... Well, we get to speak to him and witness him swim because he is a great swimmer.
He's a brilliant face for the sport as well. Like he talks really, really well.
Yeah.
Is open to speaking whenever.
Yeah.
Like he will do all the media interviews and through the meet, like halfway through this meet, there's massive tension for these guys. Like he swam the 50, yes, but the next day he's got the 2-3.
Yeah.
And for everyone else, that is hugely on your mind. And he's just there calmly taking questions, speaking, and it's just we've spoken to him since he was like 18, and he has always had the attitude of an older swimmer in a young man's body. And I think he's a brilliant
role model.
Yeah, role model. And like, we don't know what Petey's going to be doing after this Olympic cycle in terms of he may not be leading the charge for Aquatics GB in the future. But I feel like Matt is there as the... I don't like using the word, but poster boy. He's the person to... Just the way he speaks to the media, it just comes across extremely well.
Well, you saw on BBC Sport that he now has a chance of winning 6 medals, doesn't he? Now, I don't think the 50... Well, the 50, 100, 200, and then the 3
meters. Right. I don't think he wins a medal in the 50. As great as his time
That's what I'm saying. So I don't know if the 50 is probably out of reach, but... The other races are actually possible. Like, he could come away with 5 medals there.
Yeah, there's some of the relays I have questions. Like, the mixed medley's tough now.
Yeah, it's very tough.
The medley on the guy's side because of the 100 fly, I'm not quite sure where it sits worldwide. I think we need to dig into it.
Yeah.
But yeah, the other ones, I'm with you. The 100, sure, if everything goes right.
Yeah, you can do it.
The 200, definitely.
Yep.
The 4x2, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
And the 4x1, I'd say that's a medal winning relay. So there's certainly 4.
Yeah.
Beyond that, I think we need to have a look.
Yeah, the mixed relay is a difficult one because of that men's 100 fly, it does throw a big spanner in.
I don't think you want a freestyler in the mixed medley anyway.
No. Unless it does it in the heats, obviously.
A male freestyler is what I mean.
I think in the mixed relay...
You have to go Ollie and Adam.
I think you blitz her from the start, and then hopefully the girls at the back end. I mean, Anna's very strong, but then when you're comparing like Kiana to like Tori Husk or
Claire Kazan
or something, someone like that.
They're going 55.
It's a bit tough. And then of course the Chinese team is pretty solid as well. It's going to be tough.
We've sidetracked massively here.
We have, yes, I'm sorry.
I think the hardest thing about this race was it was amazing to watch, and there's kind of one guy stuck in the middle of it, and it's the Olympic champion who's not going to get the chance to defend his crown, which is really hard to see. Like, it wasn't an enjoyable experience seeing what Tom got put through because of that, if I'm honest.
Yeah. But it was going to be horrible either way. I said this on the preview.
Yeah,
it's like elation for two of them, Duncan and Matt, obviously. But then I suppose Tom and Jimmy did get the relay slot, obviously. But then Tom's the Olympic champion.
I don't think that was ever in doubt in their mind, though, the relay spot.
Oh, that wasn't. No, it's just you had to finish top two. And it's weird to say, but that the Olympic champion will not be defending his title. Wasn't going to make it.
No two freestylers ever defended their title. And it's still going to carry on. It's an amazing thing, the strength and depth of UK swimming, but there's a human at the end of it who gets battered because of it, and it's not fun to see.
Yeah, not ideal. Especially when he did a bit of media beforehand saying, I'm going to target 5 medals, and now obviously he can't do this race. So he's getting almost like a bit of backlash from that. But
I don't think so. I think it was the right thing to do. It was good for the meet. It was good for him. It's good for the sport at the end of the day to come out and say
I think it was a good thing because it just promotes the sport. It promotes him. It promotes people watching the actual event. But
it's just hard.
Then the media go on the other side and then sort of slate him. Which is difficult to see. But it was always going to be difficult for one or two of them to not make the individual team or, individually for that event.
Shall we pick things up a little bit then and talk about something a little bit happier on the final night?
I mean, that should have been a happy race, actually, but it was always going to be difficult. Yeah,
should have been a very happy race, but I think we've just ended on a bit of a sour note. The men's 200 metres backstroke, Ollie Morgan and his last 50 of a two-back, he knows what he's doing, doesn't he? He split a 29.26 to chase down Luke Greenbank and get the touch for the second year in a row.
I don't know how he does it.
Like every time I can't understand it. I watch it, I'm just like, there's a different, like, what?
Like, I saw him after the race and I just went, how? How do you do this? Like, I see he was 100 swimmer. Like, and then you pull out a massive final 50. He was level with Brody on that final 50 and then ended up beating Brody by 0.8.
Yeah.
That's huge. That's massive. Like, the best part of a second.
And Brody got underneath the nomination standard as well. And yeah, he did. Lucky to finish third.
Yeah, and we actually spoke to Brody afterwards, didn't we? And asking who hit all the times. And he did everything he could. Like, what can you do?
He literally just... I think I know we spoke to him in the media zone. I spoke to him before the 2-3 as I was heading up to film that. And he's just like, look, I just lost to the 100 record holder and the 200 record holder in this country. I went under the nomination standard. I don't think I could really have asked for much better.
Yeah. I know he's off PB, but even PB-wise, it would have been tough to try and beat those two. Luke, I think, would have been... Well, he was happy, I think. He just wants to go to the Olympics. He was happy with that. So, yes. I mean, I don't know how Ollie does it, but he is, he's defended that title now, both 100 and 200, 2 years in a row.
Yep.
Just incredible. What a journey that guy's been on. Just amazing.
It's fantastic. I'd love to maybe take a little bit more of a deep dive into it and go see. Not just Ollie, because Gary's a fantastic coach and probably deserves a few articles written about him that he's not getting.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
Women's 100 metres freestyle then. Anna Hopkins sets the Olympic standard and she's the only swimmer to go under it. She goes a 53.33, but it was quite a tough time to hit.
Yep.
Maybe the bigger surprise is the top four don't hit the nomination standard for the relay. But I would say this is where the Freya Anderson consideration and discretion comes in, because normally when she's fit and fully healthy, she can hit 53, which puts the team in.
Yeah.
So I think they do take her and they take this relay, and this is where they take Eva Akaro because she came second.
That's what I think as well.
I'm relatively confident about that, actually, as the discretionary picks.
I always like the idea that they take relays anyway.
Yeah, you've said that so many times on this podcast.
Like millions of times. So I think that's the way that should be going. It's difficult with Freya because you don't know how she is healthy-wise, whether the glandular fever will be less by then, if that's the right terminology, or, you know, it's improved.
Yeah.
Because she's more than capable of going 53. She probably would have hit that nomination time and given Anna a bit of a run for her money.
Yeah.
And then Eva hits her PB in the heats and in the final, I believe.
Yep.
And then who finished fourth to round out?
Freya Colbert.
Freya Colbert. See, but Lucy Hope should have probably been, but she's going anyway. So
yeah, this is what I mean. So you're only taking two discretionary picks for this relay because Freya Colbert's already qualified. Lucy Hope's already qualified. Abby could maybe swim this as well. Abby Wood's already qualified. Medi could swim this. Medi's already qualified. I take the risk personally, and if Freya isn't healthy enough, well enough, then you've got named four different swimmers.
Yeah. Yeah,
and maybe this is where you take Eva for, God forbid, for experience. But I don't actually think she's an experienced swimmer if you're going 54.4. I think that's a very good time.
Is it? Oh, no, individual. For the relay, yes, I think it's good enough. Definitely. Yes. Individually, it's a bit off at the moment.
No, I don't think she races it individually. But I do think they take this relay and I do think they take Eva.
I think so. I hope so. I hope that's the case. But we'll find out next week.
Fingers crossed. Mm. Elsewhere on the final night then, the women's 800 metres freestyle, Amelie Bloxage gets a British age group record, a personal best, and a very, very long, busy week for her, because as well as the 4-3...
She raced everything, didn't she?
Yeah, as well as the 4-3, she raced 4 a.m. I think even she raced the 2-3. So she had a very, very busy schedule.
8:15 at 4 a.m. Yeah, it was busy, basically. Yeah.
Fleur Lewis just behind her. Those two have got a bright future battling against each other, I think.
I think so, yeah.
While all the headlines will get written about Amelie for the next few years, I think Fleur is there or thereabouts, and she's in a very good squad to keep improving, because we've seen the performances coming out of Andy Manley's Loughborough squad.
Well, hopefully, because Amelie's doing what she's doing, that hope that drives Fleur on to bigger and better things as well. I think that, that hopefully should be the mindset for Fleur.
Yeah.
And then the whole altitude idea, I think on the long term grand scheme of things, will actually work for her. It's just trying to work out the best way logistically for it to work.
Then I'm going to go slightly negative to end this podcast. The women's 100 meters breaststroke was so hard to watch for people who have bigged up Angharad Evans since December. By every sense of logic, had this not been an Olympic trials and a British Championships, she would have very comfortably, in my eyes, broken the British record and hit that nomination standard. Mm-hmm. But weird things happen when nerves and trials come around, and I think this was a case a little bit like Jacob Peters, a little bit like a few others this week, where we spoke to her and she said, well, she got to 70 meters and man, was she working. Whereas previously, when she hit so much faster times, it's just been easy. Really tough. And like, as well as Cara missed it as well. And both of these girls, in my eyes, are very capable of that nomination standard. And they're probably missing out on the team because the medley relay is not good enough. There's no discretion for these girls to go.
Oh, I hate that as well.
It's really hard. It was one of the hardest things for us personally to watch.
Well, it's just because we know what they're capable of.
Yeah.
Like, I was actually half expecting a 65 point. I was actually expecting it because Angharad has been swimming as well as she has been.
And she had an incredible heat swim.
Yeah, she had an amazing heat swim where, did she hit the time in that?
Yeah.
The heat or just off or something?
No, I think she did.
She did hit the time, didn't she? So I was just expecting her to just find next gear and hit a 65.9, let's say. And then Cara wouldn't be too far away as well. I was kind of like hoping that they would both hit the British record. They'd both be underneath it. More than capable. But again, I just think it might have been trials pressure or something along those lines. There was so much on the line. Big shame, but we'll see. I mean, it's in the hands of the selectors right now. But I'd love to see the relay go. But
I'm not confident.
They won't make a podium, I wouldn't have thought. So,
yeah, it's a massive shame because I think they know, we know, that there's a faster time there. Just trials. Like you swim Angharad today, tomorrow. I think there's
probably
another low 106 in there.
Probably,
But she also was fairly upbeat considering the situation when we spoke to her.
I just think she knew where she went wrong. I think that's, once you know where something went wrong, you can kind of put the demons away a little bit. And so you know for next time.
She's only just gone to Stirling as well. And while we say Stirling's improving everyone massively, she's certainly one that has made leaps and bounds. And next year, you never know, without the Olympic name attached to all this, there could be a British record on the cards.
I think the British record is on borrowed time.
Yeah.
It's just maybe this meet wasn't the one because there were other factors in play. So you just had to win, but then you had to hit the time as well. But yeah, that will happen for her and Cara. I think they'll both go underneath that time at some point.
Let's talk about the paras then to end this week. And like you teased in the last day of review that we just did, the women's mixed classification 100 meters breaststroke saw six swimmers hit a Paralympic nomination standard. I'd love to know what the record is for most in a race, but six out of eight finalists.
Yeah.
So you have Brock Winston, Iona Winifred, who tie for gold, and they're in different classifications. That is some achievement in itself.
Rare. Very rare.
Even more of an achievement is Iona Winifred, who's 12, who will most likely go to the Paralympics now. Maisie Summers-Newton in third. I think those two girls have just beaten Maisie in a mixed classification.
Yes, I know.
Which is incredible. Rebecca Redfern goes sub-para nomination standard, as does Grace Harvey, as does Louise Fidesz. So we said the men's 2-3 was one of the deepest events of the week. Was that the deepest and the best?
If I suppose
got
in theory,
six going. Yeah.
Six going, and all of them, I believe, are different classifications as well, which is amazing. So you've got depth across all classifications for the same event. And the 100 breaststroke is a big event when it comes to the Paralympics, just like the 400 freestyle, where or pretty much every classification races it. So the fact that we've got six swimmers going for that race, very exciting.
Yeah. The men's 200 meters freestyle, William Ellard equaled a world record, the second equal world record. We've teased it previously to equal Rhys Dunn's time is so, so good. He goes a 152.4 for a 200 meters freestyle, the S14 category. very, very impressive. Other nomination times hit across the final day's racing for the Paris swimmers. The women's 100 meters freestyle, Tully Kearney hit her Paralympic standard. Mm-hmm. And I believe that's it, Dan.
For the Paris side, yes. Yeah, there
well,
you go.
Well, actually, for the full recap review, and we're under 2 hours comfortably.
Woohoo!
Oh, God. I kind of, for people who've listened this far, you've probably listened to the 2.5 hour preview. I kind of apologize for it being that long, but I don't apologize because there's a lot to talk about in UK.
Yeah. Do we apologize? Not really, because we're swimming fans first and foremost, and we should be celebrating these British swimmers as much as we do because they are phenomenal, aren't they?
Yeah.
Like some of the best swimmers on the planet, and we get to witness and see them all, both able body and para swimmers, all together in one, and we get to know who the best swimmers are.
Yeah, we're very much swimming nerds, and we're very happy with that. Right, I'm going to end this podcast then very quickly, because the team's going to be announced next week. The announcement gets made at Stirling University, I believe, on the 16th mm-hmm. of April. Swimmers find out on the 11th. Which is the day this podcast goes live, but the public won't find out until a little bit later on.
Yep.
The swimmers that are definitely going and hit nomination standard.
So I've got 23 that are, I think, guaranteed to go because they hit the nomination time and they finish in the top two and or they hit the relay time, right? Mm-hmm. So with the women, we've got Anna Hopkin, Freya Colbert, Kathleen Dawson, Honey Osrin, Katie Shanahan, Kiana McInnes, Laura Stevens, and Abby Wood. That's the individuals, mind you. For the men, the individual swimmers will be Ben Proud, Matt Richards, Duncan Scott, Dan Jervis, Ollie Morgan, Johnny Marshall, Luke Greenbank, Adam Peaty, Tom Dean, Max Litchfield. And then we've got five swimmers here who are part of relays. So you've got Lucy Hope, who'll be part of the 4x2, as well as Mehdi Harris, who'll be part of the 4x2. And then you've got Joe Litchfield, Jimmy Guy, and Alex Cahoon, for different relays, actually. So 4x1 medley for Joe. Jimmy's got a 4x2 and Alex for the 4x1, which then leaves seven for discretion.
Seven spots. So should we have a very quick, as we're under the two-hour barrier,
go on,
a very quick debate on who else should go if I'm naming seven swimmers.
Yes.
I'm not putting too much research into this. I'm just going to name seven.
Okay.
So I would go Eva Caro, Freya Anderson.
I've got those two.
Take the 4x1 female relay.
Yes.
They're out. I take James Wilby
yep.
as a backup to Adam in the mixed medley and medley relays.
Yep.
I then would take a backup for the 4x2. And by that logic, I would take Jack McMillan.
Ooh, okay.
I know. Bit of a wild card, but I also think he's a slight backup for the 4x1.
I haven't got Jack down. I actually went Kieran Bird because I think he should do the 400 and he did a pretty decent 200 as well. That's where I went.
I was going to name Kieran next.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
So I think they take two backups for the 4x2.
Okay.
I think selectors would have loved Max Litchfield to make that 200 meters freestyle final because he would have been one of them.
Yeah.
Joe Litchfield's time in that final wasn't good enough either, so he can't be a backup in my eyes.
Yeah.
So I think they take two because Matt and Duncan at this point have very, very busy schedules. So I think they rest them both in the heats, which leaves two spots.
Yes. See, I didn't have Jack down. I've kind of gone for these are, again, hoping for relays to be taken. So either Angharad or Kara, I suppose it has to
be Angharad. I don't think it goes.
If it does go, then obviously she would go. Another name would be Amelie Bloxage, whether they would take her experience.
If I had two more slots, I would go Toby and Amelie, personally. But I might also take... The problem is the 100 fly, none of them hit the A cut.
Well, Jacob
Fina,
he did in the heats, which is where the biggest headache is.
Yeah, but then Josh beat him in the final. So if you take Jacob, you're opening yourself up to quite a decent appeal from Josh. Although you could never run Josh against... So in my logic, I'd love to see a fly swimmer swim the 100 fly heats and see where they're at. to see if they are better or thereabouts with Joe Litchfield. But I just don't think it happens. There is two open spots potentially to take Jacob and potentially Angharad because she's both hit the heat swims. But
yeah, that's not what I think.
It's not how British swimming ever, Aquatics GB has ever run things. If you miss it in the final, the heat swim, it just isn't good enough. They kind of treat it as if, well, you can't handle it at trials. Why can you handle it at the Olympics?
It's very difficult. But then if you're taking someone like Kieran, who also missed a time, then...
Yeah, but you've got the 4x2 and you need a second. In my eyes, you need a second backup.
Yeah.
Which is why difficult. Kieran goes.
Even though there's 30 spaces, they're not guaranteed to take all 30.
No, that's the thing. I've got 28 I can very clearly see.
Yeah,
and then
I'm pretty sure Freya Anderson will go, and by that logic, so does Eva. I think Kieran Bird will actually end up going because he was so close to that 400. He did a very swift 200 as well. James Wilby, I think that he will go also. I think the 28 names, Jack McMillan, yeah, probably, based just because the gold medal is very much on the cards, so you kind of take him. And then it's just, Jacob Angharad, and then Amelie. Again, I'm conflicting. Don't know if they take
Here's
her
another name we've not thought about. The men's 4x1. Do you take Jacob Whittle, because he came fifth, as the backup for that, if you've got an extra spot that we're talking about here? I think maybe they would take him over...
I mean, maybe, but then, like, Jack McMillan can do a solid 100.
Yeah, but is it enough to make the final of that? Because he came 8th.
Well, 48, isn't it? Well, they all went sub-49.
He went 48.7. So. Is it enough? Oh, that's a selector's problem, then. Yeah, it's a selector's problem.
That's not our headache. We don't need to think that hard. But we can probably get about 28 names. 27, 28 names, I think. And then it's hard after that.
Yeah. Okay, so that just about rounds up this week's episode of the Propulsion Swimming Podcast. Thank you so much for everyone who followed along while we were at London. It was one of the toughest and best weeks of our lives. I think we will openly say that.
I'm still shattered now, to be honest with you.
I'm so exhausted. Tired. We will be back next week where we will be discussing the selected team and potentially what medals are on the card from that team. On next week's episode, and then hopefully we'll get a few guests on in the coming weeks of the swimmers who made the team as well to discuss their thoughts. So if you haven't subscribed already, please do so on YouTube, Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and me and Dan will be back in 7 days time.
Thank you for listening, everyone, and we'll catch you on the next one.
You've been listening to the Propulsion Swimming Podcast with Scott and Dan. We want to thank you for joining us and invite you to subscribe to the show, as well as checking out the Propulsion Swimming YouTube channel for weekly tutorials and videos to get your swimming fix. We will be back next week. Until then, we'll catch you on the next one.